Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend John Couch, John Engineering and producing our program. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio for this Friday. It is March the 13th, Friday the 13th, 2020. We are live each weekday, have been since the first week of January 2011. So we are in now to our 10th year on 1030's Tucson Voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening and podcast at buckmastershow.com. Our media partners, big shout out to TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, the Tucson Local Media Group, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview, Dr. Kate Kensky is with us, professor of communication and government and public policy at the University of Arizona. There she teaches political communication, public opinion, and research methods. She's the associate editor of Public Opinion Quarterly. Her book, The Obama Victory, How Media, Money, and Message Shaped the 2008 Election, has won several literary awards, highly acclaimed. Joining us in studio with Dr. Kensky, Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. He's the editorial director for the WIC newspaper group, which includes more than two dozen publications all over the Western United States, which keeps Dan very busy. And I'm glad he could give us some time, as we're very glad Dr. Kensky could join us as well. First of all, Dr. Kensky, it's good to see you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Dan, nice to see you, my friend.
Always good to be here.
All right. At this moment, the president, Dr. Kensky, is declaring a national emergency in light of the coronavirus. Mainly, that's going to free up a lot of federal funding. That seems to be the core message there, that there's going to be a lot of federal money being pumped into this. Recovery when it does happen, and we hope it comes pretty darn soon. Political messaging over this, the Americans, the public pretty much has been divided over the coronavirus, Dr. Kensky, over kind of party lines, or is there more to it, age included?
That, I think, has been divided in different ways. One is certainly party. Early on, a few studies were done, and one showed that Democrats were more interested and willing to take some preventative measures than were Republicans. So that was happening. But that said, I mean, even as a week ago, a lot of the measures that we were talking about today were not necessarily top of mind for most Americans. So we need to keep that in mind. But yes, another way in which people are divided is certainly along age lines, in part because the virus itself appears to be more susceptible to those who are in the older age categories, those who are middle age or younger.
What's different about this pandemic than the last one we had over the H1N1, which was pretty much a 12-month period, Dr. Kensky, from April 09 to April of the next year, 2010, we had 60 million cases in America. We had approximately, I think, more than 12 million deaths. But this one hopefully won't get to that level, but what's different this time? Is it social media that's partially driving it?
Well, I would say some different things. I'm certainly not an epidemiologist,
sure,
but it would seem, you know, on the surface, it's moving in a different direction, and there is less understanding about it. So just from a structural background, I mean, we didn't know as much about it or how it was going to spread. And there's still a lot of questions that remain. So there's that. In terms of how people understand it, absolutely social media can be a driving factor. Whereas when we think back, you know, to a decade ago, mm-hmm, people, you know, would turn to newspapers. They would get information online. But we weren't as dependent on smartphone systems as we are today. And one thing that happens when we are getting information as a constant stream is we are attending to that much more quickly than we did in the past.
Here's Dan Scheer.
Looking at behavior, at what point do people tend to trust their neighbors more than the experts? I saw a Facebook post last night and it said, boy, look at what's happening over at Costco. Everybody, there's a run on all the paper goods and the shelves are emptying out. And I'm feeling kind of like maybe I should go do that too. That was exactly the post. And I thought it's like this pack mentality. This person is probably very reasonable, has a lot of common sense. But at what point do we start saying, wait, they're doing it, so maybe I should too?
Well, I think that's actually true of most things in human nature. I mean, fortunately, unfortunately, I like statistics, so I'm going to say unfortunately. I mean, a lot of people don't look at numbers. What they do is they look at anecdotes that are very vivid and seem real or close to them. And we know that, right, in terms of the kinds of stories that people are interested in. Well, what are they interested in? They're interested in things that they can understand. And so I can understand what my neighbor is doing much more easily. I have a picture in my mind than if someone tells me a statistic about my chances of contraction.
And then they see a picture, Dan and Dr. Kensky, on Facebook showing empty shelves. And so what do people do? They thought, my goodness, I better get my supply, right?
I've missed out. And I was telling Bill earlier, I was over at Walmart in Sarita yesterday, just as the poor guy, the employee, was wheeling out an 8-foot wall of toilet paper. And I stood there for 15 minutes and watched every pack snapped up. And I'm thinking, why? So I asked a couple of people, and there was a lot of sheepishness, actually, which I was glad to see. No hoarding. Everybody just took one. And they said, you know, pretty much because other people are doing it, and this is what I'm hearing. Canned soup and rice and beans and that. And I guess it's a sense that you're going to be in your house for a while. I've never seen this in other flu situations, and I know this is different.
Mm-hmm. I do think there is that sense of urgency. We do have the phrase pandemic now, mm-hmm. to hang on to, and different emergencies. Without understanding what we can necessarily do in a logical, effective way to really help the situation. And if I can buy my way into it with a couple rolls of toilet paper, that might ease me as opposed to changing some fundamental habits that maybe I wasn't as good as I thought, like washing my hands for a full 20 seconds with soap.
Dan, you want to leave the virus and go over to politics for a while?
Yeah, you know, there are, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she says, you know what, I have never been asked to be part of a poll or a survey or anything. How do we know that, how can it be that I've never known anybody who's been polled, I've never been polled? How do we know that these polls are accurate? How do we know this?
One is looking to see that in the discussion of the poll, are people being randomly selected? We have a very large country, millions upon millions of people. To gauge where the country's at, we don't need millions upon millions of people to participate, mm-hmm. to get pretty reasonable estimates. And so it makes sense if you haven't participated in a poll. That doesn't mean that the polls aren't good. It's just that a good poll, if it says random selection or some kind of probability sample, has gotten people that are like you to respond to the survey.
Then how do polls end up being so different? A CNN poll doesn't match a Fox News poll on the same question. How do we get such varying results?
Good question. Now, one is that if we're talking about politics, a lot of organizations are not transparent about how they're weighting their data. And that means that if it's the case that I seem to be under sampling, let's say, African Americans, I need to then adjust my weights so those African Americans that are in my sample count a little bit more. Now, what ends up happening is that some organizations might project that a higher percentage of Republicans are going to turn out on Election Day than another news organization. And so those behind-the-scene weighting mechanisms can make a huge difference. Now, what ends up happening with various polling groups is they like to keep their weighting exactly how they've weighted things under lock and key, because if they've been good at it, they don't necessarily want to share that information with their competitors. As a result, we don't have a lot of transparency on those things. Exceptions being organizations like Pew that are nonpartisan, so they don't have that same kind of mentality to not release the information.
How are the polls indicating a coalescing around Joe Biden versus Trump? What's the latest thinking on that?
So, I mean, interestingly, the things that I'm seeing is that it does vary state by state. And so mm-hmm. for the most part in the past week, Biden looked like he was going to be doing quite well. But there's some things to keep in mind. One is that we are, you know, in a weird moment in history with the virus
crisis, the health
going
crisis,
on.
Yes.
And so I'm not sure, you know, what factors might lead people to not be as mindful, to maybe be temporarily mad at the administration. We mm-hmm, just don't know how people mm-hmm. are reacting on that mm-hmm. front. And the second thing is that we have had Biden be, you know, a part of the Democratic primary, which was giving a lot of attention to the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Now, once that attention goes away, because we're not having a Democratic primary, I think it'll give us a more realistic expectation about how the matchup would be between Trump and Biden.
And the president feeds off crowds. And right now, crowds are something everybody's avoiding. And he's, with reluctance, I understand, canceled some of his rallies. That's kind of how he gets his energy, you know, dealing with getting the energy from the crowd. And you wonder how all of... There are so many factors. We've got the virus. You're not going to have politics talked about that much right now. It's all the virus 24/7. It is kind of a difficult time to do some polling on politics, isn't it?
That, you know, there's different reasons why we do polling. I mean, I think it's good to have snapshots in time. Mm-hmm. What becomes problematic is when we just look at the snapshot and then try to make some inferences all the way to November, because that's a long time away in the world of politics.
Great point. Young voters, we know that they just didn't respond like Bernie Sanders expected, but where did we get the idea that they actually would? Because they have a tradition of really not coming out, even when you have someone like a Bernie Sanders.
I think that's a fantastic question. And what I would say is every election cycle, there's that sense that the youngest generation is going to come out and change things. And
yes.
I think that if we were to go back, you know, all the way, I mean, you know, through the 70s, I think that that's kind of been the coverage. Or this is the most important election, as though the last one didn't matter. I think that we have a humanistic need to feel like we can make change. And we can. I mean, that's the thing, is if people were to turn out, we could do change. Mm-hmm. And so I think we need a belief that this is the most important moment. And I guess I still support that need, that we need these beliefs. Mm-hmm. But whether or not that need matches a reality is something else. And so actually, I sort of agree with the premise of your question that it's what we do every election cycle is the young people are going to change things. And again, I would say they do have the power to do that. I think inertia has just kind of ruled the day.
But you're reaching back to the 70s and saying this is going on. It's probably even before that. But really what it amounts to is manufactured enthusiasm. And why aren't we as the media calling them on that? Because the fact is, young voters rarely ever come through.
And I would say
that's true. George McGovern in 1972, the anti-war movement.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, there's going to be a tidal wave of young voters, anti-war voters, going for McGovern, and look what happened.
He was crushed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, what I would say is that is right part of the news narrative. We need the drama.
Mm-hmm.
But what?
Oh, I hate to hear that.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. But I mean, you know, drama is part of the story.
Sure.
And I think one of the things that is interesting, as I said, is there's a lot of groups that don't turn out in as high numbers they could. And could they change the election? Yes, the potential is there. But
we've been saying
the
that about Hispanics, and when are they
yes.
going to turn out to vote in Arizona for years?
Absolutely.
And I think the thing to keep in mind is, when those groups really do mobilize, they'll be a force to be reckoned with.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. I want to tell everybody, Kate, about my favorite bakery in town. Everybody can agree on Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Steve, the owner and chief baker, I know, Dan, you've been up there and have met Steve and told him about how you enjoy the Kringle. What was your experience there?
It was a great experience, and I'm thinking now more than ever we need to be supporting these small businesses. And
no kidding.
Who wouldn't want to be supporting them? And, by the way, getting some great food at the same time. time, and I will tell you, every time I go into a bakery now, my thought goes back to them because they really do it right, Bill.
Yeah,
they really honestly do.
And I was thinking about, you know, the social distancing and
yes.
Please, you know, don't get together with like more than 50 people. Well, there's not a lot to do right now in town
right.
With all the events canceled.
Right.
Why not go out and support a place like Mona's?
It is
or
crucial.
Vero Amore, our great sponsor, Vero Amore and Noble Hops. This would be a great time to just stop in. And if you don't want to do like sit down, we often get a pizza from Vero Amore and take it home. I mean, how about carry out?
Take it
but
with you.
There has never been, I don't think, in my 32 years here in Tucson, a more important time to support local businesses with what's going on. And that said, same down in your area, Green Valley.
Absolutely. And after 9/11, you remember Bush said, go out and shop.
Yes.
Now, that was a little strange, but yeah. You know what? He was right.
He was
absolutely right. And you know what? One pizza can make a difference.
It certainly can.
It really can.
All right. More information at monasdanishbakery.com. And of course, there's a link to all of our great sponsors at buckmastershow.com. Dr. Kate Kensky from the University of Arizona sticks around, and we'll talk more with Dr. Kensky after the break. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Ama Douro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
Thank you. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our Friday Focus interview. We take a deep dive into a particular subject, and right now we're talking about communication, messaging in this age of the coronavirus. Dr. Kate Kensky is with us. Dr. Kensky, Professor of Communication and Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona, where she teaches political communication, public opinion, and research methods. Dan Scheer is here, Green Valley News and Soharita Sun editor. Dan, very busy, of course, with the WIC publications, that family of publications, more than two dozen of them around the Western United States. How effective is, Dr. Kensky, do political campaigns change voters' minds? There's a new book out called Not Born Yesterday, The Science of Who We Trust and What We Believe to Be, I think it's already been published in January from Princeton University Press. And basically, I think kind of the bottom line message there was, when we encounter a message that challenges our views, our first reaction is usually to reject it. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. I would say that that would be what most, I think, the literature would tell us, you know, leading up to this moment. Campaigns, generally speaking, aren't necessarily used to persuade people to change their minds. Going back to the 40s, the studies show that campaigns aren't good at that. But what they can do is change our enthusiasm for positions that we already hold.
Reinforcing then positions?
Absolutely. And so if immigration, for example, is the motivating factor for me to vote for Trump or not to vote for Trump, and the campaign's focus on that issue, it's not going to change where I was to begin with, but it gives me that sense of enthusiasm or repulsion one way or the other to follow through on my predispositions.
So they really don't change voters' minds?
No. I mean, rarely.
So
I would say, let me say rarely.
A lot of money is spent, at least $6 billion is going to be spent in the 2020 political campaign, and it really is not going to change anybody's mind.
It won't change people's minds, but I guess what it will do is, I mean, some people will stay home because they're not enthusiastic.
Maybe if Bernie doesn't get it, what percentage of his supporters may say, I don't like the nominee and I don't like either candidate?
That's quite possible. And I think that that's, you know, why the Democrats as sort of a collective were hoping that the nomination phase would wind down early. On the one hand, long nomination processes, mm-hmm. having all those primaries and debates means free media coverage, which is fantastic mm-hmm. for candidates. On the other hand, if people get so entrenched in their candidate and they only liked that candidate, they're less willing to be enthusiastic when it comes to the general election.
Here's Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News.
At one point in the presidential campaign, Elizabeth Warren was polling very, very well. They practically gave the nomination to her. Then we get to the actual voting, and she was crushed. How could the pollsters have had it so wrong on her?
At the moment that they were doing the polls, they probably didn't have it so wrong. What makes a huge difference in primary campaigns is the frames that the media choose to put around the candidates. We put a lot of attention on coverage of, who won in Iowa or who won in New Hampshire, or South Carolina. Even though, if we looked at the actual delegate counts, these are just short moments in time with a very small percentage of the overall delegate count to the Democratic convention.
What's the latest thinking, Dr. Kensky, on the big race, the Senate race everybody's following here with Kelly and McSally? What is the latest? But what are the latest polling on that? What is
that? I'll tell you that this is one area where I think it's still too early to engage. I try to avoid, at least this, especially this early, try mm-hmm. to avoid drawing too many conclusions about polls. I think that a lot of people at the moment are not focused necessarily on the, I mean, except for political junkies, right?
Right,
they're not,
right.
They're not focused. And so I would say that it's way too early to bring out much that's meaningful about such bullying.
Go ahead, Dan.
Do you think we can draw some conclusions about women candidates and voters? We had Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar who were strong and qualified, and they went nowhere. Do you think voters have a bias against women when it comes to higher office, or do you think they just liked the male candidates better?
You know, I mean, that's the interesting thing about the literature. It, you know, ends up at the lower levels of government when women run. They win, generally speaking, with the same frequency that men do, if we control for things like incumbency, so those type of things. But the higher up you go, the more being a female tends to question one's competence in terms of leadership. So there is a percentage that will not vote for females. I'm not exactly sure what it is, you know, during this particular season, but you know, a couple of years ago, it was about, you could depend somewhere between 7% and 13%, just wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where we get into persuadability, though. That doesn't necessarily mean that those who won't vote for a woman would necessarily have voted for a man. They might sit it out if it was someone from their party. But that does mean that whichever, you know, party puts forth females for higher office, it makes it just a little bit harder. The other thing I would say to keep in mind is, once again, just like primaries where the media have a lot of sway, if the media choose to continually ask, can a woman be president? I mean, the answer is yes, of course. Yes. We have this mechanism in front of us.
Yeah.
But as long as it's phrased in that way, it further contributes to a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that we're somehow not ready.
I want to go back to the way we began our interview today with Dr. Kensky about messaging through this health crisis. I personally see some trends that will emerge out of this, Dr. Kensky, when it comes to communication. More and more people have been told, huge corporations, to work at home. There won't be that interaction, perhaps, certainly in the near term. You wonder, will it even come back? What about conferencing, people traveling the world to meet with their colleagues and meet face to face? That could change forever as well. How do you see it?
That, I mean, I think it certainly could. Conferences, face-to-face travel are certainly an expense for institutions.
Right.
And so they don't necessarily want to see the value in it. And it's hard when the value isn't something that's going to give you necessarily an immediate return.
Mm-hmm.
The kinds of benefits that tend to happen at conferences are certain types of connections. That's one benefit.
They can be long-term. They're not short-term usually.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, one thing about our, you know, our the way our society has gone is that we focused, you know, on the short term, and we're very individualistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, hopefully that won't be a long-term problem. And hopefully conferences that have found them useful and that can see things that maybe individual institutions can't will still be able to, you know, hold sway and push for them.
Then the economic factor with people working at home, it's beneficial to a company, I guess, to do it that way.
It can certainly be less expensive. You don't have to take care of the space needs. You don't have to take care of the air conditioning.
How about communicating, though, face-to-face with people? I mean, this is your area. This is what you do. You're a professor of communication. How about the creative communication process of actually meeting with people?
That, you know, I would say that it depends on what people like to prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is also something that tends to be a generational break.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been, you know, growing up with social media and your phone,
right,
that kind of communication may seem quite real to you in a way that someone who has, you know, spent most of their professional lives face to face with others, you know,
like me,
does it, makes a difference.
I didn't think of it that way.
So
it could be very
a
much a generational thing. All right. Dan, do you want a final wrap up here for us?
Yeah, brief question. We've had a couple of states that have toyed with it, but do you think we're ready for widespread internet voting? Is the trust there? Is the technology there?
I don't think the trust is there quite yet. I mean, I would say among certain parts of the population.
Sure.
You know, as we become a society, though, that uses things like Alexa and starts putting, you know, faith and, you know, behavioral dependency, maybe that will change. But, there's a reason why states didn't push for it, you know, after 2000 and 2004. There were some systematic problems. And if we're concerned about how trolls, you know, shift conversation, you can only imagine what would happen on election day if it was done through the internet.
I didn't get to this. I'll see if I can quickly work it in. Political ads, flooding, the streaming services, are they revealing loopholes in federal election laws?
That we'll certainly see how that ends up panning out.
But social media is certainly driving a lot of the election coverage right now.
It is. And the thing about social media is, remember, it is a channel. And so in terms, for example, of advertising, you know, if I am on Facebook and I share an ad, that's, you know, a way for me to direct, you know, what the candidates want to see. And so it's really hard to separate political advertising from social media because they really are becoming blended together.
All right. Dr. Kate Kensky, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Dan Scheer will stick around with us. We'll have the roundtable portion of our program. Jim Nintzel joins us from the Tucson Weekly. Jim's on the line right now, but we're going to take a break. Be back in about 4 minutes. Stay with us on The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Moa Mosgallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday edition. Good conversation with Dr. Kate Kensky, professor of communication, covered a lot of ground. We have Dan Scheer sticking around from the Green Valley News, Sahorita Sun, and Jim Nitzel's on the live line, executive editor at the Tucson Weekly. Jim, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill, I'm happy to say.
As he coughs, right? Yeah, you're fine. Everything's fine.
Don't worry about a thing.
Right.
Nothing to see here.
You know, it is really hard. Dan and I were discussing this just before we went on at noon today, to find any activity that is still going on that is like more than two or three people together. And we were saying, and we said this during our Mona's Danish Bakery commercial that we love to do, that now if you can't find like an event or something to do, go out and support a local restaurant. How would that be, Jim Nitzel?
Well, yeah, except you don't really want to sit too close to anybody in that restaurant.
Take it home.
Social distancing and all. It's going to be all kidding aside. It's really going to be a terrible, terrible, terrible impact on our performing arts organizations, on our restaurants, on our small businesses. As these shows close down, much fewer people will be going out for a night on the town, obviously, and that's the restaurant business right there, and a lot of these places operate on very tight margins. These are very, very, very rough times ahead for many organizations. I mean, you don't have any shows at your theater for 3 or 4 months. That's a third or a fourth of your revenue for the year, and that's nothing any business can afford to absorb. So I'm very concerned about, obviously, I think the big concern with a lot of people who study this stuff is that you don't want to overwhelm your healthcare operations, like we're seeing in a place like Italy, where they simply don't have enough beds for the people who are sick, and the healthcare workers are all becoming ill as well. And if you can slow the transmission, so it's not a huge bump, but a slow absorption of the virus across your community, then you have a much better chance of not overwhelming your healthcare system and leading to the kind of crisis you see. But unfortunately, that has huge impacts for the local economy. The spring training is canceled, and ATC's announced today it's canceling its theater, and the Rialto's going dark, and the Fox is dark, and it's just. Very rough times ahead.
How about in Green Valley, Dan?
Well, we have the Community Performance and Arts Center, which is not going dark, and they told me yesterday that a lot of their acts have canceled. A lot of them are local, so they don't have to travel, so that's good. But they are not. They're a 200-seat theater, and they're just, of course, wiping down things and making sure that things. And they have a great operation anyway. But Jim, I have to ask: do you think just a little bit? I understand the carefulness, but do you think it's a little bit of an overreaction?
It's impossible to say. Because we don't know how many cases are out there, because we don't have any test kits. Last I heard, we started the week with 300 test kits in all of Arizona, and I think my reporter mentioned earlier today we were up to 800, which is frightening because we simply don't know, and the virus has a long incubation period. We will never know if it was overreaction, and the only thing we can do is wait and see what happens in the weeks ahead, and it's you don't know, and that's one of the more terrifying elements of this entire thing. I'm sure Green Valley, in particular, is an area, given the impact of this on the elderly and how deadly it is for folks who are older, that there's there are concerns down there.
Right, but in a sense, we have this concern every year because of the flu. And again, you just stay home if you are vulnerable. And in this one, it seems like we flipped everything, and we just said now we're forcing everybody to stay home. And I think that's rubbing some people the wrong way. I get the care, and I get the fact that there are some unknowns about this. It's a new virus for us. We've never dealt with it. But I think there's also a sense that this is extraordinarily damaging to the economy. And is it worth it? You're right. We can't fully know, but there seems to be a pack mentality. Once the NBA announced they were canceling the season, everything just tumbled.
Right, and then you had the NBA player who was making a big joke out of the whole thing, and then, you know, touching reporters' microphones and acting like it was no big deal and messing around with his teammates, and now he's tested positive. So yeah, it's very difficult to say, is it an overreaction, because we just don't know how many cases we have here.
But we do know that, generally speaking, that, you know, a good 80% of the people are going to have
mild to moderate.
A lot of them won't even know they have it, quite honestly. But again, the elderly, I'm concerned about that. But I was telling Bill that 2017, Pima County had 157 flu-related deaths. Flu is not coronavirus. I get it. But the fact is, we're so used to that year after year after year that it barely even makes the news anymore. And the potential for this one, of course, is much bigger. But again, a wholesale shutdown is quite breathtaking.
It is most definitely breathtaking, and, you know, I never imagined I'd see a week like this in America.
Nope.
Honestly, it clearly has never happened, and nothing like this has happened with us. And again, I don't know. I'm not an expert. I don't know if it's overreaction, but I think a lot of people would feel pretty bad if they had an event and it turns out that there were carriers and the disease spread from there.
All right. Well, I realize both of you are not experts in immunology and this area, but I know both of you quickly and love to follow politics, and I'm wondering the implications here. This is the Dan and Jim signature, the home stretch of gathering signatures. I would imagine going door to door right now and asking for somebody's signature, even trying to find a lot of these people use these large events like the street fair and other places to gather signatures. Am I onto something here, Mr. Ninsel?
Well, if you're a candidate, I certainly hope you got your signatures already.
There you go.
The deadline's closing in. You can now gather, I think, 50% of your signatures online, which I think will help in some cases. And, you know, in some cases, these campaigns require a great deal more than others. You know, the legislative races don't require a whole lot of signatures. But if you're doing something on a larger scale, countywide or what have you, you do need to get a whole lot more. So Corporation Commission, for example. So, yeah, I think... you know, again, if candidates are organized and they know what they're doing, they shouldn't have any trouble getting on the ballot, and that's not true of every candidate.
And that's always the case. You know, census time is here too, Dan Sheeran. And if people don't go online, which is the first way to do it, to fill out the census, someone will come to your door, and this could talk about really bad timing. And there's a lot of money at stake. Pima County,
absolutely,
last time around, the undercount was a lot, tens of millions, I believe.
The town of Sorita, where I live, is very much on top of this and has been for months. And we've talked with them and just promoting that very idea. Just, you know, get it done online. You don't want the visit. And, hey, we all have a lot more time to go online because we're not going to events, apparently. But I do hope you go out and get that pizza and bring it home. But I don't think people understand how crucial the census count is for the community that they live in, the county they live in, the state they live in. It's huge.
Mm. Jim, we had, as you know, Dr. Kensky, who you like very much and respect, here on the program for our Friday Focus interview. We talked a little bit about polling in the McSally and Kelly race. She says it's really too early to draw some conclusions. In your issue of The Skinny, this week's Tucson Weekly, you talk about McSally's kind of this signature issue revolves around health. How will that play in with this coronavirus?
Well, I don't think it's going to help. I think there's probably a whole new focus on health care. And I think that's something that Martha McSally got really hammered on in her 2018 campaign. It was an area where voters trusted Kyrsten Sinema well above Martha McSally on health care. And I think she's trying to change that. You know, she keeps insisting that she supports protections for people with pre-existing conditions. Her problem is she's voted to repeal Obamacare on any number of occasions, which of course would have removed those protections and without a replacement. So I think that's, it continues to be an issue for her. She has released this new legislation to deal with prescription drug prices that are rising, but it only deals with generic prescription drugs, and those are already subject to competition, and those prices don't generally create the problems for folks who need medications. It's the stuff that is patent protected, and you can't have a competitor in the marketplace. And those are not something that she addresses in her legislation, because she says that you need to have drug companies continuing to profit so they can do their research and development. So I don't know that this is going to do much or go anywhere, but I think she is hoping that it will give her a talking point on the campaign trail that she's fighting for lower prescription drug prices.
Jim, I have a quick question for you. What do you make of the voters who support Bernie Sanders but swear that they will not vote for Joe Biden if he is the nominee? Do you think they're lying to us?
Well, I think they'll have to make up their minds come November. Which way they want to go with this. And I think this whole coronavirus, we'll see how it plays out in the United States. With any luck, we will not be looking like Italy, hopefully, because obviously that's nowhere anybody wants to be. But, I can't even start to make predictions about what's going to happen between now and November, because we are entering into a whole new world.
We talked a little bit about concerts that are being suspended. The Fox, beginning Monday, March 16th through Sunday, April the 5th. Now,
And let me update that. They've actually canceled this weekend's shows as well.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah.
My point here will be that the fact is, if we luck out and this doesn't, and let's, pray it doesn't become a big deal, it'll be reevaluated. And so at this point, it's only up until April 5th, right, Jim?
Correct. But, they host a lot of touring acts.
And I know.
A lot of touring acts are pulling the plugs on things, and we'll see whether or not how long it takes to rebook all of that stuff, if and when, they get around to touring again. So, These musicians, they need an audience to go on tour, and if no one's coming out to shows, then there's no reason for them to be traveling the country and putting themselves at risk.
Huge economic impact.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Across the board. We have not, a lot of experts are saying we have not seen the worst of this.
So, all right.
It's just wait and see.
Jim Nintzel, thank you very much. Dan, final word.
Quick shout out to Jim. You guys have a story on your page. It's called, the headline is Best Games to Play When Everything Is Canceled. It's by your tech writer. Brilliant, by
there
the way.
There you go.
I think there's going to be a lot of streaming this weekend.
All right.
That's right.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll have Weekend Watch with Matt Russell right after this.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
I don't know about you, but I have never been so ready to jumpstart a weekend after this week, this portion of the Buckmaster Show, and specifically our weekend watch with Matt Russell, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Lots of folks deciding, well, I'm just about ready to take a road trip. Just jump in the car and get out of Dodge. And so how about visiting Southwest New Mexico, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico? Their website, a great place to start, southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find all sorts of ideas about how to recreate, a lot of outdoor activities in the Gila National Wilderness, and all sorts of hiking opportunities and great places to stay. southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist, and award-winning Tucson publicist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. As you suggested, ready for it this weekend, man.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we were talking about it during the show with Dan Scheer. There has never been a better time. With all these events being canceled, there's never been a better time to support a local restaurant this weekend, Matt Russell.
That is absolutely true. And, Bill, I am so encouraged to see how some of these local restaurants are keeping their customers engaged during this, you know, time of chaos and confusion. You know, I still go out to eat every single day. I'm not the slightest bit hesitant, but for the others, the Flores family of restaurants, they're going to be taking 10% off all carryout orders from this weekend through April. Now, of course, this is El Charro, Charro Steak, Charro Vita, Charro Del Rey. Four restaurants to choose from if you want to bring the flavors of Flores back home to your family this weekend.
Great idea. And some people would like a pizza. And I know that one of my great sponsors, Vero Amore, they're more than willing to do the carryout pizza. We do that very often. And others as well, Matt Russell.
Yeah, indeed. I just heard about this today. Rocco's Little Chicago Pizza is now offering par-baked pizzas for you to take home and finish off in your own oven. Rocco tells me it's 350 degrees until it's nice and hot inside. Just call ahead with your order. And I also heard that Gourmet Girls, gluten-free bakery and bistro, they have a new takeout order special. If you buy a quiche or a chicken salad sandwich, you'll get another one for 50% off. And if you dine in there tomorrow or Sunday, Bill, you're going to get a free mini mocha cupcake. That sounds good to me.
What's going on at Roma?
Well, when it comes to grab-and-go, Roma Imports has got you covered. You know, they have a full array of homemade entrees that represent the old-world traditions. Their refrigerators and freezers line the entire length of the store, and they keep them stocked with scratch-made dinners. I think it's a great time this weekend to swing by Roma Imports, grab a big pan of lasagna, heat it up at home, and be the hit of your neighborhood. You know, Italy might be closed for business, Bill, but Roma Imports is ready for you this weekend.
And quickly, Matt, in the column?
It's Produce Palooza at PY Steakhouse. That's a lot of alliteration, but you can read all about it in Inside Tucson Business.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, Matt. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of our program. My thanks to John Couch on the other side of the glass and all of the people here at Bustos Media wishing you a safe and pleasant weekend.